very important to live this kind of experience as an opera, because the tasting menu at the end is built like an opera, no? You have an overture, the things that they're telling you what to expect, you taste it, you realize, you start analyzing that, and then you have the adagio, really slow, and then the allegro, and then the minuetto, and then the grand finale.
Much like the maestro conducting the orchestra, Massimo Bottura playfully and passionately directs his kitchen. The man behind Osteria Francescana, a 3 Michelin-starred restaurant in Modena, often hailed as the best in the world, injects into his cuisine tradition and revolution, memory and innovation, seemingly incompatible concepts that come together perfectly at each bite, be it fractured lemon tart or a fillet inspired by Damien Hirst, or a conceptual take on a Mediterranean soul. That's S-O-L-E. Bottura has devoted himself in recent years to feeding the hungry through his foundation Food for Soul. Opening a series of beautifully designed refettorios in Milan, Rio and London, Massimo has reinvented the soup kitchen, exporting hospitality and commitment to quality from the osteria and importing other world-renowned chefs to work with him. But Massimo's ideas don't finish there. The man dreams big, and between running a world-class restaurant, reinventing the soup kitchen and amassing a hefty record collection, he's already cooking up his next project. And I'm pleased to say he joins me today for this season's premiere episode of The Big Interview. Massimo Bottura, it's a great pleasure to welcome you to Monocle 24. I'm interested in those joins in your head. I know you love music, and you were showing your record collection to one of my colleagues in the magazine.
Yes. I just bought a new collection. A very old collection from a guy that he just passed away. So his wife called the office and they said, okay, come here, maybe we could be interesting in the collection. So she dropped by all these incredible 2,500 vinyl from the 50s of jazz music that his husband was collecting for years and years, decades. When I saw them, I'm like, oh my God, what do we have in Modena? You know, I called her immediately. I went just to check. Everything was like perfectly kept in plastic seal. And, you know, I said, okay, I'm buying it. So this is new stuff that is adding to the...
So the collection has grown by 20%.
Yeah. No, okay. We don't have any space now. So we have to build a new library.
This is the right way around to be doing things. Yeah. But Massimo, I must ask you, when are you going to have time? That's a lot of records, right? 2,500.
Yeah, it's a lot of record. They're like, right now, I think there are 12,000. But Lara said, but where are we going to put all these records? I said, this is the dream. As you buy. No, once there was like, for at least 10 years, we look for a rondinone, a big target of rondinone. And, you know, after 10 years, I found the most beautiful target ever made, 3.05 meters. But it didn't fit in a house. And so I bought it. I said, don't worry about that. We're going to find a way to put it. And then when they deliver it, there was no space even to put in the house, because the doors, they're like too small. And this big painting, like round circle, you couldn't, you know, move it around. I said, okay, let's put it downstairs. But downstairs, there's no, it's not enough, the ceiling. And, you know, I said, okay, let's break the ceiling. And so I asked the guy working in the house to break the walls and ceiling, and we fit it, and to fit the painting, because art is about dream. It's not about how big it is, if it's fit well or it looks good in that place. Oh, that's good. No, that's decorative. Art is dream. It's about dreaming, like music. Like the dream is something that make you a better person.
And what cost does that, or can that come at? Do you think you need to pursue that dream regardless? I mean, I know when you were much younger, you were maybe one time going to be a lawyer, you're going to be a footballer maybe. Yeah. How important is it to give everything to in pursuit of that dream? Do you have to, must it come at all costs?
You know, I grew up in a very wealthy family, so I know exactly how to grow up with no need and nothing. But it's not that the money, they make you happy, you know? So my mom and my older brother encouraged me to follow my dream. And one of the dreams I have was food. with art, with music. 1 week later, I have this small restaurant outside in the country. Everybody was saying, okay, he's the spoiled brat that is going to, you know, stay 6 months and then he's going to come back to the university. And I never left, you know. Maybe because growing up, I remember, I always have this image of me running in the kitchen, stealing food, close to all the women of the house, like my grandmother, my La Tata Ines, and, you know, my mom, my aunt Anna, you know, and they were spoiling me. And so I always thought the kitchen was my safety place, the place where I belong. Even now, I think, when I'm in trouble, I'm in the kitchen with my guys.
That's your refuge.
My guys, yes.
And it's interesting to reflect on, I guess, these traditional ingredients. And yeah. Italy has a reputation as a country where they're very serious about food. There's a food tradition.
Yeah.
Now, your cooking has obviously always been a bit of a marriage of these traditions, traditional ingredients, but with a contemporary touch. Has that, yeah. Is that a,
it's been,
is that a challenge? Yeah, or does it's not, do they not necessarily contradict one another?
Once I was talking with René and I said, I think it was more challenging for me to trying to innovate Italian cuisine than for you to create a Nordic cuisine, you know? Because, you know, we were discussing about that. Because they didn't have anything, you know, the people, they were like, why do we have to spend time around the table? They didn't get it, no, before. But for me, to break all tradition, like Ai Weiwei, no, when he breaks the vase and, 2,000 years old vase and says, I'm not defeating my past. I'm breaking my past to build a new tradition filtered by a contemporary mind is exactly what I do. I look at the past in a critic way, not in a nostalgic way, always. Mm. And I get the best from the past into the future. If I have a big pan of lasagna, as a kid, I know that the best part of the lasagna is the crunchy part. The rest is for adults to eat and get fat. But the crunchy part is just emotion, pure emotions. If you have, oops, I dropped the lemon tart, is a way to play with the imperfection. But the flavors are capers, bergamot, lemon, almond from Noto, the Pantelleria, and Calabria. You know, the range of flavor of south of Italy. The most amazing product you can have. You know, you can squeeze the lemon in your palate and you feel it's sweet. You don't need sugar on the, when you prepare a zabaione with that. So that's the point. Is to represent the metaphor for south of Italy as a broken place. But when you walk in a Temple Valley or you swim in Capri, you just, you know, are in the best place in the world. So forget about, you know, everything else, you know. And it's exactly what we do in Osteria, you know. We try to serve emotion. People, they don't get crazy to get a reservation in Osteria Francescana, you know, to eat food, good food. You know, you can eat in any trattoria anywhere. You come there to experience. From the moment you make a reservation, so how they answer to you, how they help you to find the right way, especially for people they want to spend the weekend there, to find the right place for Parmigiano Reggiano, to taste the best balsamic vinegar directly from the barrels, you know, live this kind of experience that are unique. And then after, at the end of this weekend, you have the experience at Osteria. So since this, you know, it's very important to live this kind of experience as an opera, because the tasting menu at the end is built like an opera, no? You have an overture, the things that they are telling you what to expect, you taste it, you realize, you start analyzing that, and then you have the adagio, really slow, and then the allegro, and then the minuetto, and then the grand finale. So you have, and the grand finale, you have everything. And then, thank you. At the end, you know, the way you say thank you to people and have welcome and thank you is like, there are two incredible words. And in the middle of the whole opera. So you come to Osteria to live this kind of experience. And, you know, the people are, when we rebuilt the restaurant in 2012, I left the room like that. We tripled the space for ourselves, kitchen and prep and bakery and cellar. But we left 12th table because I had the opportunity to go out and talk with all my guests. They come from all over the world. This kind of experience is very, very important because Osteria is not about business. We are 50 people for 28 covers, so it's not about that. It's about emotion. We compress into edible bites our passion. Music, Monk, Parker, Billie Holiday.
And you're the maestro presiding over it, to continue that
analogy. Because to keep together a team, you need a leader. Otherwise,
But does it get harder? I wonder, you know, we know that the Osteria was heralded as the world's best restaurant. I think it's still obviously widely regarded as such.
5 years in a
does
row.
Does that change that ability to communicate that emotion? Does it become more difficult? I don't know. Is that a responsibility
easier.
That
it's
weighs
easier.
Heavy?
It's easier. It's easier because the people, they are listening to you. Before, they didn't listen to me. Yeah, they were looking. They were asking questions and then thinking about something different. They don't even listen. Now they are listening. And this is much easier for me to communicate this kind of stuff. You know, they come with the heart open. Even Netflix, the episode on Chef Table, Theaters of Life, all these video and the Tea Magazine, video about the crunchy part of the lasagna. You know, all these things, they help. The people, they come, before coming, they check everything. They come, they know everything. Much better than the locals. Much, much, much better than locals. And this is driving me crazy. Because, you know, 2 weeks ago, there was a guy from Reggio Emilia, you know, side on Modena. And it was like table of eight, and everyone was like so into the food, and except for this guy, lost in nostalgia. I love this, but you know, the ragu on tagliatelle is not very deep. I was so mad, and I was like, okay, why? I don't have filter now, so whatever I think, I say. And he said, so why? Because was a little bit, it's not interesting. Interesting. You use the word interesting. Okay, my grandmother was making ragu that stays here. Yeah, because you're nostalgic in this moment. Tell me how your grandmother was making the ragu, I asked. So he said, with different cut of pork, concentrate of tomatoes, and this. I said, I'm really sorry for you, because your grandmother didn't know how to cook. And, you know, the whole table was laughing.
I think you're going to say
they knew I was right, because a ragu with just one tone of flavor, so just pork, is wrong. You need to put many different cuts of many different animals, you know, and you cannot work with a concentration of tomato because it's cover everything, you know. Mm. At the end, you taste just tomato. So you have to finish everything with butter and, a parmigiano to give a flavor. And this was so wrong. So that's why, and that's how it explained my idea of look at the past in a critic way, you know. And, it's very, very important, this. And Italy is like, most of the time is lost in nostalgia. But when guests from Lima, Tokyo, there's a guy, like 1 month ago, he flew from Tokyo, landed in Malpensa, rent a car, 3 hours drive, sit at the table at lunch. He had like 25 course meal, spent the afternoon with the team, went back to Malpensa, flew back to Tokyo the day after. It's when you have people like this, you know, so passionate, so into the food, you know, makes your day, you know.
What about food education then? It's interesting you talk about a guy there who's maybe blinded by nostalgia, or whose taste buds are rendered neutral by nostalgia. Mm. How is the state of food education? I mean, I don't know, is it an Italian problem? Is it a global problem? I certainly think we have a problem here in the UK.
Yeah.
Is it different for different markets? Obviously, we've been talking a lot about fine dining, but you have the refettorio concept as well. Yeah. Do you see similar problems that people just don't know enough, maybe, about food?
Actually, in Italy, we have... I live in a region, Emilia-Romagna, that is kissed by God because, you know, it's called the Food Valley for one reason. And there are this old lady called Razdore. They cook for kids, you know, in a nursery school, in a primary school, and they learn, and there are many of the schools, they take kids to learn how, what is Parmigiano Reggiano, what is balsamic vinegar, you know, make prosciutto and or make pasta, and they play the laboratories with flour and eggs mixing together, you know, make mass. You know, I was part of one of the some of their laboratory, this laboratory. And I think this is extremely important, because when you grow up like that, you know, you develop the palate. In these last couple of years with the project of the Refettorio and traveling all over, you know, I've seen in Milan people from Libya, Syria, you know, refugees, in Rio, homeless and kids and here. I've seen, you know, people that they don't have this kind of approach, but they are open to learn. In Milan, especially, after a couple of weeks that they were like very shy, it was celebration every night. And after a couple of weeks, they were complaining about food, about how much food, because it was so good for them that it's like, wow, this is something different. This is an experience. You know, in Rio de Janeiro, I remember a couple of husband and wife, they were living on the street close to the refettorio. They said at the end of an interview with Andrew Jacobs of the New York Times, they said, it's the first time they treat us like human beings. We felt like prince and princess because they were serving us, and they're serving us great food. Experience, all these people, they're not used to spicy food in Brazil. They were experienced spicy food from north of South America, spicy food from Asia. And they were trying. The volunteers from the favelas, they got used to sugar mm-hmm. as richness, out of poverty. These people, they drink Coca-Cola since in the morning, and they got fat. I said, okay, there are just bananas. What are we going to do? We're going to make sorbetto with banana. Make your own sorbetto, and then I'm going to correct you. So they make a sorbetto. They made a sorbetto with 50% of sugar. And when I tasted it, I said, what the hell is this? You know, I just taste sugar. I didn't taste any banana. And then he threw it. And the banana was like smelling everywhere because it was so good, so ripe, so beautiful. And they said, Because we love sugar, we love sweet. I said, but banana is already sweet. It's concentrate, it's brown banana. It's pure sugar and fruit, natural. We try this exercise, no? Lower the percentage to 30, to 10, to 0. And they discover the flavor of banana. That's the way you have to play. And that's the way yesterday, in a service of with Alain Ducasse, the Refettorio Felix at Earth Court, we just opened. There was this guy was complaining because he wanted chips. We refused to serve chips. We didn't want to serve chips. We said, here we serve good and healthy food. And you have to learn to eat this. But these people, they got it immediately. You know, in Italy, it took a couple of weeks to break into their art. Here, the first day, an old lady asked to talk. I gave the microphone, and she said, I'm so happy to see a place like this. So beautiful, feel so comfortable, feel community, and I'm happy to die close to a place and having a place like this. Live the last moments, because she's very old.
It strikes me that here in Britain at the moment, we're in a bit of a low ebb. People seem to be less tolerant. They seem to be less interested in
what's outside. That's why we need a refettorio.
But that's amazing.
It's a refettorio that we decide to break walls, you know. Mm. Exactly in Rio, they were closing the soup kitchen because they didn't want to show during the Olympics to the world that all these people, they didn't have anything. And they closed all the soup kitchen, and they moved these people outside the Rio de Janeiro. They built a big walls to hide the favelas, like from people they were coming from the airport. And so what we had to do, open a soup kitchen and have these people again in Rio, exactly as here. People now are building walls because they are scared of the future. They don't have vision. That's why.
And they're obsessed with borders. It's interesting. We're talking about the Italian food identity. It's always defined by borders. And I guess that's food's incredible power, or one of its great powers, is that it can break those down. But I wanted to ask you, Massimo, on that point, is it a chef's job to be doing that? I mean, it's incredible work, but should you be showing people that we need to be knocking down borders? Should you be showing people that there's too much waste, that we need to eat more healthily?
I think in 2017, a chef with culture has this responsibility. Chefs, I think, are much more than the sum of their recipes. People are listening. Culture, knowledge, consciousness, sense of responsibility. A chef with culture, and that's why I say it's the most important ingredient for a chef of the future, studying, reading, getting deep into things, you know, transform the interest into passion. You can transfer emotion through passion. And, you know, knowledge, develop, you know, create a team that is following you. Once you have this, you know, it opens the consciousness that is very, very important, especially an Italian chef like me that grew up in a very social area, region, as Emilia-Romagna, we have this in our DNA. And the sense of responsibility, of course, when you receive everything from life, what do you have to do? Give back. And this is the moment in which you give back. And I gave back like this, you know, try to involve everyone all together. We share this idea all together. This is a big change, eh? And we want to give back, and we want fight waste, because numbers are numbers. 860 million people, they don't have anything to eat. 1.5 are overweight, and 1.3 billion tons of food are wasted every year. 33% of the production. So this project is a cultural project to fight the waste. And more than that, we transfer our knowledge to the volunteers. So they're being, and we give the example, we set the example for the new generation, the new chef they see, and they look at us as an example. So this is what a chef in 2017 is a agent of change. And this kind of project are very inclusive project. You know, we are breaking the walls in the moment people are building walls and say, please, welcome. You are welcome. Come inside, have fun, have joy. Let's celebrate together.
So it's one of the problems here about a general attitude towards, you know, a fellow man. You keep talking about this importance of sharing experiences, whether it's as a kid with family or growing up and partying, and you share your dreams with your friends and then they can help and you can help them reciprocally to realize those. Is part of it about just being more open to people? I mean, is that, I guess, maybe one of the key ingredients in any great business, in any great job of work, to have these great people around you and confide in them?
Create a team is the most difficult thing ever, especially keep together the team. You have to stimulate them. For me, I stimulate them culturally. You know, they have a little notebook in which, you know, they write small pages of being humble, being passionate, being a dreamer, Russian constructivism, pop art.
The usual things you'd find in a kitchen, right?
Monk, usually. Yes, of course. Of course. It's very helpful. We won a competition in 2005, best plate in the world about olive oil. We gave the structure in the plate inspired by Goncharov by Larionov, like this old, you know, geometric line in the same plate, almost like a metaphysic way. And we won a competition like that, you know, because I knew how to play with that. The Russian constructivism was helping, you know, that. But even the Italian Transavanguardia, or like the Wild Germans, the new avant-garde music, or John Cage. It depends, you know. It's about know things, you know. And, you know, when you know and you spend time on touching a paper, you know, it gets fixed into your mind. You know, if you get lost into these small phones, you know, you don't have anything, you know. That's why it's very, very important to stimulate the people. And the people, they know that. This young generation, they are ready to learn.
Massimo, tell me a little bit about where you talked about the kitchen as refuge. Where else would we find you taking refuge? We know you've got your extraordinary record collection. You go to your music room and you find some, well, a little calm there after a busy service, this kind of thing. Are those the places you return to time and again, or are you always looking to find the next spot that might be? Could you discover a spot of tranquility
I have a new dream, you know, but I don't know if I can talk.
Oh, go on.
Okay, but don't tell anyone, okay?
Okay.
So, first, we have to move some refettorio to the United States because the Rockefeller Foundation gave us a great grant. So we have to find a way to open in first in New Orleans. Jazz, no? New Orleans, we need...
It's the only
It's the only place, New Orleans. But in the meantime, the Regione Emilia-Romagna, the mayor of Modena, all together, Slow Food, we decide to restore, to rebuild an old villa that is the waste of architecture. Built in the 16th century by this amazing family, Sora, the Count Sora, and they built an amazing, amazing place, abandoned, except for the field all around. It was a 360 degrees agriculture villa in which you have a production of animals, cheese, fruit, vegetables, built for the family. Unbelievable. The most beautiful villa in all the region. Abandoned. Close to that villa, there is a school of agriculture that, you know, was extremely important during the 50s, the 60s, and the 70s because every single cheesemaker, winemaker went to that school and they built the fortune of Emilia. But the school was going out of business 10 years ago because, you know, everybody wants to be a chef, but no one wants to be a farmer. So I said, okay, I'm going to help you, but, you know, what we're going to do, we're going to put a kitchen in the middle of the school. So after a couple of years in which the chefs and the future chef and the future farmers, they study together, at the third year of high school, you're going to choose, you're going to go in the field or you're going to go in the kitchen. But you study together. So together means you grow together, you learn together, and you respect each other. And the chef of the future, they're going to know more about soil. And the farmer of the future, they're going to know more about taste. Now that school has a waiting list. There is a line of people waiting to get into that school. I said, but this is just the first step. For me, the dream is build a university. And the natural place for that university, because we have to have big dreams, you know, you cannot dream university like this, it's too easy. You have to have the best university in the world, the most beautiful university in the world, better than Harvard University. So we have to have Villa Sora transform into a university. The waste of architecture is going to come out and become something amazing. So the region, after discussion of like years, discussion now, the European community approved the project. In Bologna, the president of Regione Emilia-Romagna is like so into this project, and the mayor of Modena and all these little villages, they all agree, and we have a very important agreement on build that university for the best people that they come out from that, or they come from all over the world, because I want a campus in which people, they mix together, you know, from Peru, Japan, United States, UK, everywhere. You know, and they grow together. They all learn how to make Parmigiano Reggiano or how to harvest the Trebbiano di Spagna grape and make balsamic vinegar or the perfect potato or the old grains to make their own bread. This is my dream.
The biggest dreams. Yeah. Massimo, and you've brought them all to life for us today. Massimo Vittura, it's been wonderful to speak with you. Thank you very much. The Big Interview is produced by Gaia Lutz and edited by Cassie Galpin. My name's Tom Edwards. Thank you very much for listening.